Oh god, how does this show start? Oh yeah, I remember.
Beware, spoiler phobes, you've stumbled upon A Storm of Spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones in conjunction with George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series. Now that we're beyond the books, the podcast has added a true spoiler section that can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, production spoilers, guesses, theories, and crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. And if that's not your blood magic of choice, feel free to jump off after the first segment. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder.
The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie. But what do we have left once we abandon the lie? Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all. Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I have not read any of the books in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series.
I'm Joanna Robinson. I've read every book in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I've read all of the books in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire. And recently, and by recently I mean last night, went and flipped through A World of Ice and Fire, which is also a book, but not... And, you know, you guys get it. It's fine.
Well, guys, how's it feel to be back from Nashville to our regular lives?
It's not as fun when people aren't dressed as, like, White Walkers and giants and lianas and whatever as you walk by. Ooh. Wait. Yeah.
I miss it.
Aw. Me too.
Aw.
I think it's... It felt definitely weird to rev up for a new season of Game of Thrones and then drop into a group of people that was just sort of becoming aware that it was coming back the next week. I feel like we're all super ahead and ready to do this podcast about what's coming up for season 7. But first, Joanna, do we have any new reviews for the show?
Oh my gosh, we do. Thank you guys so much for your generous reviews. I'm going to read a couple. They all fall under Dave's criteria. First one is from Megan, with an H in her name. 5 stars, a ton of fun. Megan writes, just a super podcast. I rarely watch Game of Thrones live, so I revel in spoilers and thus love this podcast. Add in a dollop of Citadel of Crazy, and these three hosts make Game of Thrones almost undevastating at times. As a non-reader, I'm still pulling for super decomposed and bloated Lady Stoneheart. Off-season tour, colon, also great. Thanks, Megan, for that just, like, avalanche of positivity. This next one comes from Gato Gordo T. 5 stars. And he says, I think it's a he, says, love the podcast, love the host. Prior reviewers have criticized the host for not being experts on all aspects of Game of Thrones. I find that refreshing. While Joanna and Neil, and occasionally Dave, love Dave, seem to know more about the source material than I do, I find it refreshing when they get a point wrong and I can smirk in momentary superiority. Their opinions and thoughts are diverse and I appreciate them even if I personally disagree. I come across as Gato Gordo T because we used to have a plump cat named Tangles. So thank you, Gato Gordo T, for the explanation of your handle.
I would like to respond to that for a second. There's something in there that I think that we should share information that will disprove. We've been criticized for not knowing enough about Game of Thrones, but we did play second in trivia at Con of Thrones behind the History of Westeros podcast, only 2 points behind Aziz and his crew. So there.
We know
needed to say
all
that.
The swords in Game of Thrones.
We know so many things about so many swords.
Yes, and you know, we'll be coming to future trivias at future times and keeping our dominance up as we move further into also show things, which is definitely where I need to be, because I do not know book things. That's what Con of Thrones taught me. But what it also taught me is that I love hearing about it. So thank you so much for having smug book responses to our occasional errors. Meeting everybody in person really turned me around to my responses to criticisms.
Oh.
5-star criticisms. I get it. I've heard you, listener. We'll keep being wrong because it brings you joy. That's why we're doing it now. Neil, we've also decided to add something in, having gone and met the people. We don't have a snappy name for this section yet, but it is a new Neil section. So, Neil, take it away.
I didn't even think about coming up with a snappy name for this.
Is this like the Rookery or something? Haven't people sent you a bunch of ravens?
Right? We could just call it Send a Raven.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is all about listener feedback. And normally this is going to be where we read some of your emails, your tweets. But we have a bunch of that in the other two segments of the show that we're going to talk about. Basically, we're using that to talk about our preview. So we're going to talk about two things. One, which is the podcast format going forward for season 7. This is something that a lot of people have expressed opinions mm-hmm. about. We put out a poll, several polls.
We had a king's moot about it.
We had a king's moot over moonshine that was given to us so wonderfully at Con of Thrones by one of our listeners, Summer McCusker.
Real Georgia peaches, y'all.
Thank you, Summer. That moonshine and our hotel room at Con of Thrones was the stage for the king's moot. And we've made a decision. We were asking people, should we section off spoilers? Should we section off all these production spoilers that we know? And really what we think we've come up with is something that is inclusive for everyone, because we know that the folks that really want to hear the spoilers, you're going to stick around for all of it. And then there are some folks that just want to hear us talk without that stuff, and we want them to stick around as well. We want everybody to listen to our show. So here's what we came up with during, and you're about to experience this in our preview episode. We now have two segments where we will talk about Game of Thrones. The first one is called The Calm.
Ooh.
But what?
And in The Calm.
Wait, okay. Yeah.
Go ahead with your question.
No, I was, when you get to the next part, let me set you up.
Oh, got it. So The Calm is where we will talk about things that are publicly available. So what we just watched, for instance, when we watch an episode, we'll talk just kind of plainly about the episode, how we feel about it. And, you know, we'll do all of our fun stuff. You know, we'll talk about polygons and all the things. But then once we're done,
what is The Calm cometh before, though?
The Storm.
Boom, brother.
In our final segment every week, called The Storm, we will dive into what we think is going to happen next, because what we realized is we can't talk about what's going to happen without some of those things we know seeping into it. Like, we can't make predictions. Trust me, I have plenty of crazy ass theories that I will unleash upon you throughout this season, some of which go against the things that we think we know. But that's irrelevant. But we really can't talk about what we think is going to happen without production spoilers being in there, because we just, at this point, we know too much, or we think we know too much, or we probably do know too much. So The Storm is where all leaks are available. The ship is leaking. I don't really get the metaphor is, I've lost it.
The storm.
But you guys
of,
get the idea.
The storm of spoilers.
That is
calm,
where the storm happens.
Then,
we've added the calm.
Yeah, the calm and then the storm of spoilers. So you get both.
Yes. Yeah, you can have both. It'll be great. So hopefully everybody likes this. If not, 5-star review, let us know. Or if you do like it, 5-star review, let us know. So there's that. Also, we've had a little look with some Twitter polls this week. They've been a lot of fun. So I think that's something we'll probably continue to during the season. So I wanted to share some results of the 6 Twitter polls that I did this week in anticipation for season 7. And I want to get y'all's thoughts on who you would pick for this. So the first one was, which pair of characters would you most like to see in a room alone together in season 7? And your choices are the Hound and the Mountain, Cleganebowl, Jon and Daenerys, Davos and Tyrion, and Arya and Cersei. So who, if you had to pick, who would you pick?
Me?
Yeah.
Wait, what was the last one?
Arya and Cersei.
What?
Alone in a room together.
Yeah, Arya and Cersei, Jon and Daenerys, Cleganebowl, and sorry, there's a fourth one that I missed.
Davos and Tyrion.
Davos and Tyrion. Oh, I think Davos and Tyrion, for boring reasons. I understand why that is an unpopular choice, but I
right, it finished last.
Yeah, but I just think that seeing the two hands together would be really, really charming. So
I do too. That's why I put them on the list. I thought, man, that would be a fun strategy session. Yeah. Dave, who would you choose?
Okay, I'm going to go with my heart and say that I'm the person that would want to see Arya and Cersei alone in a room together.
Yeah, you've been gunning for Cersei for a long time, buddy.
Yeah, and they wouldn't resist like talking at each other until one of them finally lashed out, probably Arya, with some violence. But I'd be in it for the talking at each other.
Nice. Well, 36% of our respondents agreed with you out of almost 3,000 votes that we got for this thing. 36% said Arya and Cersei, 32% said Jon and Daenerys, 21% are for indoor Cleganebowl. I guess somebody would have said outside together, maybe. Anyway, so that was poll number one. Poll number two, who is the most likely candidate among the great sidekicks, which I got in a lot of trouble for, to die in Game of Thrones Season 7. I counted Tyrion as a sidekick. I have heard your feedback. I still kind of think he's a sidekick.
I can't believe you think that.
Joanna would like to distance herself from that.
I publicly disavowed this.
But between Davos, Tyrion, Tormund, and Bronn, Joanna, who do you think is most likely to die?
Davos, Tyrion, Tormund, and Bronn. Tormund.
Yeah, see, everybody picked Tormund, 38%. Dave, do you have a differing opinion?
No, I got to go with Tormund.
Everybody's taking Tormund.
Sorry, buddy.
I feel like people are doing this just to make me sad.
Well, I think if we're like sort of leaning on some Twitter information or trailer information, we know that Tormund's going to be like battling White Walkers north of the Wall this season, you know.
Right.
And I don't think we see Bronn in battle with the Lannisters. We've seen
against like dragons.
Davos
maybe.
Hanging out. Tyrion Lannister is not a sidekick, so therefore disqualified from the poll. So I think Tormund looks like he's in the most trouble according to the trailers. So
nice. This next poll is who is most likely to sit on the Iron Throne at the end of Season 8. So when it's all said and done, this actually goes with a question we got from Matt D, which is who's the most likely candidate to sit on the Iron Throne, and has your personal pick changed at all? So the options I gave were Cersei, Daenerys, Jon Snow, and the Night King, which I guess the Night King also counts for there is no Iron Throne anymore.
Wouldn't it be great if he
gotta sit down?
Yeah, if he sat on
just
it.
Just because we haven't seen him sit down.
He like sits down and then it just snaps to bits and pieces because he's frozen it, you know?
Right. It would be very uncomfortable for him.
Yeah. I pick Daenerys not because I think Daenerys is a great leader, but because I think the person who deserves to be on the Iron Throne, and to answer the listener's question, like, I think my choice for a long time was Tyrion, but I've come to understand that, as someone put it on Twitter this week, Tyrion works best under a figurehead. So Daenerys as a figurehead for Tyrion's strategical mind is why I would pick her to sit on the Iron Throne.
Mm-hmm. Dave?
I'm going to pick Daenerys because, for different reasons, because I think that she's the one that's going to have the leadership ability tempered, and I think when it comes to the Great War to come before this has to all end, Jon's going to take the leadership as like the savior of men, but that doesn't mean that we need another war king, because that didn't work out with the Baratheons, so I think Jon will abdicate the throne to Daenerys pretty freely. Mm.
Yeah, and I didn't put democracy on here or the Sea Lord of Braavos, which...
The Who Lord of what?
Know,
where?
The Sea Lord of Braavos. The best leader. You know, anyway.
What's his name?
But after,
have you learned his name since the last time I asked
think
you his name?
I his name is Tommy.
I think
Tommy, the Sea Lord of Braavos.
What the fuck's a Tommy?
44% of our respondents, like almost 4,000 votes, picked Daenerys, and Jon Snow came in second. After Con of Thrones, though, I think my vote goes to the Night King. There's a lot of Night King support out there, guys. He got 21% of this poll. It's I bet you if we do the same poll next year, it'll be higher. He's gaining ground.
That's one of those things where it's like, if that's how the series ends, we'll all look back at Baelor differently. Like, we should have known. Don't invest in anything. Oh. Yep.
Okay, I got a couple more here. If you could choose any of these four Game of Thrones characters to defend your honor in single combat, who do you pick? The options are Bronn, Brienne, Tormund, and the Valyrian plot armor of Jon Snow.
Yeah, okay, damn. I was going to say that. I was going to steal that Twitter that Twitter response, which is that you always pick Jon Snow because he has the hardiest plot armor. He's definitely not going to die. So I pick Jon Snow.
Mm.
Plot,
Dave, who you take?
Plot armor, if a listener doesn't know, is like a joke of like, you know, if a character feels bulletproof, they've got plot armor. So, yeah.
Right. And Jon now has a lot of it.
So much. Yeah.
Resurrected plot armor. I'm going to take Bronn just because it'd be fun. I mean, like, he wouldn't really be defending my honor as much as my promise to pay my debts and maybe give him some land, but I'd have more fun with that.
I'll say this. He's a winner. He's a scrappy winner. You know who else has never lost in a single combat on the show? Brienne of Tarth. And that is 42% of people said Brienne in our poll. She beat Loras. She beat the Hound. She beat like three dudes in the woods. The only thing that could kill that can beat Brienne is the smoke monster.
Well, or uncuffed two-handed Jaime Lannister, but yeah. That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, yeah, see, that doesn't exist.
I love Brienne. I don't know why I said that so loud. I love Brienne. I just, like... I don't want...
We spent several minutes debating this last weekend.
So many debates. What is your favorite Game of Thrones battle episode thus far? And there's four of them. Blackwater, Watchers, Hard Home, and Battle of the Bastards. I think this one broke Joanna's heart, didn't it?
Real did. Battle of the Bastards. Not only is Battle of the Bastards like winning big time, right?
But 51%,
like
51%, yes.
But like there's all these responses of like, you're a stupid drooling idiot if you don't pick Battle of the Bastards. So as your friendly neighborhood stupid drooling idiot, I will pick Hard Home.
Hard Home's a good one. It's 28% in second. I actually would pick Blackwater.
Yeah.
Because the character work combined with the action, combined with what we know about how they weren't operating with infinite budget at that point.
I agree.
Pretty good.
I agree that the battle plus we talked about this in our live show a number of places. We've talked so much about Game of Thrones recently, but I agree with you, but still my heart bleeds for Ice Zombies. So
That's fair. Dave, what do you think?
I'm going to go with Blackwater only because Hard Home has a lot of not that 20 minutes that also comes before it. So.
That's true. Battle of the Bastards also has like 20 minutes of other stuff.
Well, Battle of the Bastards also has a lot of stupid decisions, both by characters and by the production staff. Mm-hmm. Visually fine.
Yeah. I feel like Blackwater should be the champion. Okay, and then the final poll that we did this week is, if you had to pick a Game of Thrones traveling companion, who do you take with you? And these four, I almost put Ser Jorah on this list, but I remember he's like a main character who gets traveling companions, so I didn't want to run into another Tyrion as a sidekick situation. But anyway, so the picks here were Bronn, Podrick Payne, Thoros of Myr, and Samwell Tarly. Who do you guys
take a joke? Obviously Pod. And not,
he's very dedicated.
Not for sexy times reasons. For like,
but also maybe for
but
sexy
for
times
pure
reasons.
Virtuous squire reasons.
I did like that a lot of people responded with Thoros for the simple reason is like, well, if you die, he just brings you back.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that works like that. But if it does, you guys have a point.
I'll serve the Lord of Light if I get to come back. Like, right. Can't you just picture like a scrawny little half-rotting me running around just like spider-monkeying people.
Spider-monkey.
Oh, I really want
nice.
White W-I-G-H-T Dave now.
White Dave.
Yeah, White Dave.
Dave, is that who you would take, Thoris?
Only if I could do that, become a servant.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we have to assume that that's possible. 51% of our respondents said Bronn, which, you know what? They have great points. I would go with Bronn to, like, Dorne, because he seems to know what's up in Dorne. He seems to actually know what's up pretty much everywhere. So I feel like Bronn's the kind of guy who you go to, like, the Reach, and you go to an inn, and he, like, knows a guy who can hook you up with all the things you need, you know? Indoor plumbing or whatever.
No, he definitely. I was rewatching again the season 6 finale, and he totally gets laid in the twins, and like with attractive daughters, presumably.
Yeah, as a bachelor, I would probably have to take Bronn. Jaime Lannister, not quite into his time with Bronn. I would be super into my time with Bronn. So there you go. Those are our polls. So we'll do less polls next week. That we need to talk about.
Fewer.
But
fewer.
What? I did.
And with that,
dentist!
We'll take a quick break. All right, guys, it's time for attempt number one at the calm.
The calm.
The calm.
Well, and I've formulated questions that do not require us to know things, just have opinions on things.
Excellent.
So, and some of them aren't even necessarily about the show, because we should talk about news related, the George R.R. Martin. In fact, this is an article that I saw on a website called VanityFair.com.
Oh, that'll rag.
Mm.
It appears to be some sort of crackpotitude put together by...
Hashtag failing.
hashtag failing MSM. some crackpotitude from a writer named Joanna Robinson about whether or not we think George R. R. Martin is secretly finished with the books.
That heck.
And I feel like this may have come from conversations we had at
Con of Thrones. Oh, definitely. 100% from conversations at Con of Thrones. Also, I feel like George R. R. Martin subtweeted me today.
Oh my God, did he? What did he say?
I think he said something like journalism died with the birth of the internet or something like that. Let me
find it. I gotta look what it, let's find out what it is so I could buy the URL.
I'm not saying it's about me, because a lot of people sort of...
Not all magazine writers are detectives.
I think journalism died the day the internet was born, and then he was just clarifying his involvement in Who Fears Death. Which is sort of the premise... The premise for this, he goes, who fears death? Not me, for sure. I don't fear death a bit, but sometimes I fear the internet. Yes, HBO is developing Nnedi Okorafor's, I bungled that, novel, Who Fears Death, as a series. Yes, I'm attached to the project as an executive producer. I'm pleased and excited to confirm that much. And he says he's playing a small part. As usual, however, the internet is blowing the story all out of proportion, at least in regards to my own participation. I will be an executive producer on Who Fears Death, but I will not be the executive producer, et cetera, et cetera. So basically, he's like downplaying his role in this adaptation of a great novel, Who Fears Death, great book, that's happening. But sort of my premise of this article that I wrote, based off of a couple things. One, a question we got during our live show where a listener pointed out that A, we don't know who's moderating the Comic-Con panel, so it could be George R.R. Martin there to drop some truth bombs about when Winds of Winter is coming out. B, Liam Cunningham said something, I think it was back in February, about some surprise time to the launch. He might have been talking about that block of ice, though, so I don't know what to tell you. Third thing is...
Poor Liam Cunningham thinks that's a surprise.
The third thing is Brennan, friend of the pod, Brennan Blackfish on Twitter, pointed out that in a recent blog post, George R. R. Martin like sort of said he's been super busy of late, and then he was posting from Santa Fe, and that his mood was pleased. You know, I put that and the fact that he's committing to these other projects, which he in the past has said like he wouldn't commit to things until he was done with Winds, as some evidence of like maybe he's done. I prefer that crackpotitude to the snarky, we're never getting another book from George R. Martin attitude. So, like, George R. Martin might have been subtweeting me or other quote-unquote irresponsible journalists today, but really I was advocating for George, which is just to say, I believe in you. I think you can do this. I'm on your side. I believe we're getting another book.
And also, like, you know, George, if you want to clear up the record with a journalist, just, like, slide into our DMs, hit us with your digits. We'll call you like a real journalist. You can respond.
The three of us.
We'll talk about other stuff.
The three of us put together are at least one journalist, so.
Yeah, there's a journalist on this podcast somewhere. Yeah. It's our ghost babies. anyway, so, but I also like it as, because Dave talked about, I don't know if this was a live show or the week before, where we talked about the idea of the spinoffs. And how they, what if they were holding the book for when the spinoff, right before the spinoffs come out, which is an interesting twist to this. So if it ever comes out later in some tell-all book that George R. R. Martin finished it in like the end of 2016, and then they convince him to hold it for like 2 years, crazy town. That I think is next level crackpotitude. So there you go. That was a question. Is George secretly finished the books? Maybe. He might be.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. That'd be kind of fun if he was. I actually would give George so many points for keeping that somehow secret. In this world where nothing is secret, George R. R. Martin having finished the books like 2 years ago would be amazing. Okay, moving on.
Well, wait. I just want to say journalism died the day the internet was born.com. we'll take you to our podcast. Sorry, I was quiet during that segment.
Can we run down the list of websites that will take you to Storm of Spoilers?
Yes, let's see here. some of these are Batman trolling. A childish annoying thing to do.com. Familiar with your byline.com. Last pages of great books.com.
The original.
And journalism died the day the internet was born.com.
So I think I believe we get to thank Maisie Williams, David Benioff, and George R. R. Martin for those URLs. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you guys are great. This is someday they're going to run out of characters and someone's going to need to buy those. We're going to be rich. Dave's going to be rich. No. Okay, cool. Can we move on? I'm going to move on to other things.
Yes.
We got an email from Lee who asks, do you think that the show. Do you think that the show should return to expectation-subverting twists as it draws to a close? We as fans would feel that many of the themes and plot points wouldn't pay off. Question mark. I didn't read that before I read that
like,
just now. But should the show go back to subverting expectations?
Yeah, we got like a question that was similar to this, I think, on the panel about like if... Well, I think on the panel specifically it was about... whether or not they're going to try to subvert expectations for something like Jon Snow's parentage after having quote-unquote established it in season 6. I think that the TV show is going to be too busy just trying to be a TV show in the language of a TV show on this scale and, you know, bring us the great wars to come. I don't think that means that there's going to be no twists. I just don't think they're going to do expectation subversion in the sense of, you know, fire doesn't burn ice or something like that. I think that would be difficult, and I think they've already spent enough time building up a great climax that's going to look like it has 100 little threads weaving into it, that doing something for shock value I think would read like a water cooler try, and I think the show is bigger than that sort of conversation.
We've talked before about the expectations set by George R. R. Martin describing the end of his books, which we anticipate the show at least will like come meet the end of the books at the end of the show, right? He's described that ending as bittersweet. So that's like that's the strongest expectation we can have going into the finale. And we've talked about certain scenarios like Jon Snow has to sacrifice himself and go live forever north of the wall, and he and Daenerys have to be separated if they are, you know, in a position where that would be poignant for the good of the realm, something like that. So that's something that I can sort of see. We don't get a happily ever after. I mean, that's the His Dark Materials ending. Spoiler alert for His Dark Materials, but like something like that.
Wait, what? In the calm? Damn it.
Sorry, Philip Pullman fans. But in the calm, he says with indignation.
I already love the nautical theme.
Yeah, but something else like, I don't know, we never ever see... I mean, I could also see as, like, there's no one who sits on the Iron Throne. Like, that not being the question that needs answering, which is something, like, that Davos says in the trailer, I can see that. But there are other things that I could see as being, like, fuck you. Like, we never get answers about certain things at all. Like, Jon Snow never finds out who his parents are or something like... I don't know. I can't think of a good example, but there are certainly, like, fuck you... There's a bad way to subvert expectations. You know what I mean?
Oh my God. How great would it be though if I don't know, like Sam and Bran and like a couple people are like sitting there talking and they like figure out the Jon Snow thing and then they just get killed by White Walkers immediately.
Or better yet,
I love
or
it.
Better yet, if like there are people who know, like Bran, who know who Jon's parents are. Or at least who his mom is, and then like, don't decide not to tell him,
right?
For certain reasons. So,
or like Howland Reed shows up and stabs everyone in the back.
Oh, that
to keep the secret from John.
That coward.
You can never know.
Ugh, you can never trust a Reed.
Bastard.
All right.
Cool. All right. Well, I feel like that. You know, that answers it. I guess in my mind, I was like, well, everybody thinks Daenerys is gonna like win. So I feel like that would be kind of easy to subvert that.
I think it's okay.
Make her not win.
I think it's okay for Daenerys not to win. I think an ending where it's just like everyone dies and White Walkers roam the earth is not what Bittersweet promises me.
Well, and then we're also approaching this episodically. So over two seasons, like an hour to an hour and a half at a time. So the expectations are going to be adapting with that. And I just don't think they have the time to throw in a whole bunch of expectation subverting because they're going to just be wanting to doing the expectation right.
Yeah. All right, cool. That's a good answer. Next question comes from Hunter, also via email. You can email us stormofspoilers@gmail.com if you want to join these fine folks who did this. Whatever happened to Davos's wife? Where is she and why isn't Davos concerned about her?
This is such a good question.
Oh God, it was never a question I had considered until
never not
this
once.
Person, you know,
I know, and I was like, God, that's a good question. So apparently, I mean, like she's probably what still crying about Mathos or something. I don't know.
Maybe. I did wiki her.
Okay.
She's mentioned, I guess, in several episodes. Her name is Mariah Seaworth, and she lives in
a pineapple under the sea.
She lives in the Stormlands in the books.
Okay.
Cape Wrath. They have a family keep in Cape Wrath. This actually kind of goes to questions we'll answer later about the Stormlands, because we haven't heard a whole lot from the Stormlands. And so I guess we have to assume that she's just chilling in their keep in the Stormlands where no one goes, apparently.
Oh, my God. If you go to the a Wiki of Ice and Fire, the photo, the like drawing of her at the top of her entry is so sad. She's just like a lady standing in a doorway looking out, wondering where her husband is.
Yeah, she really gets the short shrift. In the book, she's described as a good-natured, plump woman with sagging breasts and a kindly smile.
Good job, George.
I mean, come on, George.
So I guess I've also Googled, and apparently the last time she's mentioned is in Season 3. Saladar San says he could collect Davos's bones after he dies so his wife can wear them around her neck.
Yeah. So, you know, she's out there somewhere.
Yeah. Waiting.
She's a lady, though, so that's
Mariah,
good.
Like, the truth is out there.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Thought maybe somebody would talk over me quietly doing that to myself.
Sorry.
In the calm?
Now I was looking it up. I was, like, further Googling it, even though I had researched it earlier this week. Moving on to the next question from Kelly in Huntsville, Alabama. If you had a choice between Clegane Bowl or Lady Stoneheart being in one of the final two seasons, which would you choose? I felt this was not spoilery because it's all about personal preference. So let's start with Dave. Dave, Clegane Bowl or Lady Stoneheart? You can only have one, but you will get one.
I feel like Clegane Bowl because I feel like I'm getting my vengeful Stark with Arya and my resurrection with Jon Snow. So I think the Starks are amassing the proper Stark characteristics. I don't mind the Brotherhood having Beric Dondarrion there instead. So I'm going to say Clegane Bowl because damn, wouldn't that be a cool fight?
I kind of feel like it's too late to do Lady Stoneheart now. I agree with all of that logically. But in terms of emotional payoff, Lady Stoneheart, I think, would be much more satisfying because, as someone pointed out recently to me, Clegane Bowl isn't really that satisfying because the Hound is not really fighting his brother. It's a zombie. You know what I mean? It's not his brother.
Mm,
and so it was his brother. It's a shambling form of his brother. And so, mm-hmm. like, is that really satisfying to kill something that looks like your brother but isn't your brother, and you don't actually get vengeance for having your face melted? It's just cold and hollow. So,
yeah, that's a good point. I think that I would, in a sadistic way, want them to do Lady Stoneheart, but in like the post-credits scene of the last episode, where it's like everything ends and however it's going to end, and then somewhere off in the woods, somebody's like, and it's like her, and she turns around, just one more little stick it to us book readers from D&D on their way out. That would be pretty great.
And then they're like,
I think I would probably.
And then they're like, coming in 2020, the Stoneheart Chronicle.
Where it's like, where the fuck was Lady Stoneheart the whole time? So I think I would still take Stoneheart, but in a weird way. And then final question in the column, we have from Twitter, from Jeff Kennedy 4. Are we really to believe that Yara will commit the Ironborn to stop raping and reaving, or that any Ironborn will follow her if she tries? How strongly do we believe in Yara's ability to stop her people from raping?
Yeah. This is...
Joanna, do you have thoughts?
This is a real good point. When Yara and Theon left with, you know, the fastest ships...
Sure.
You know, did they take the liberal Ironborn with them? Like, who would follow a woman? Like, who are the Ironborn that went with Theon and Yara?
Yeah, the woke ones.
The woke
Ironborn. Which is more than I would have expected, considering their history.
Who are here for women's rights and LGBT-ish and, like, you know, castratos and all that sort of stuff like that. So, yeah, I think maybe she can bring the woke Ironborn to heel, but in terms of the larger group that is now following Euron, no, I don't have confidence in her to be able to stop them.
Right, because those guys are super into
They're
raping.
Like the...
safe to assume.
Love to rape, so...
I agree. I think there would have to be some sort of bloodletting of the Ironborn,
yeah.
Like where they like kill half their population. But then again, those islands are small, so like, are we really going to miss those guys?
You just put Yara on the throne, and then you Dakaris one ship of rapers, and then everybody's basically okay.
Cool.
On my to-do list, Dakaris one ship of rapers.
We've seen it before.
You guys want to go reaving? Are you sure? Do you remember what happened to the last people who went reaving? Yeah, I thought so.
Don't make me get my Drogon out.
The Battle of Raper's Bay. All right, cool. That's the calm.
I am the storm, brother. The first storm and the last. And you're in my way.
And so that means we're back for the other part, the storm.
Speaking
where we
of
get
Ironborn.
To talk about spoilers.
Yes. Which
is my bread and butter for things, because, oh man, there was like a Reddit thread that people are having trouble proving wrong, and I know we said something similar to that at the beginning of last season, and then we're horribly wrong, but this one, guys,
this time is real.
We totally feel like it's happening. So I was like trying to talk to people at this Game of Thrones pre-party I went to that has a very strict no spoiler policy, but my I tried to explain that it's a play on the third book's title, and you know, it was just sort of about the books originally. But then sitting down with a gentleman to play trivia, he asked, you know, like, how do you even get spoiled now that you're like out of the books? And I'm like, well, there are production photos, and he had no idea those things existed. And I'm like, well, there are even like Reddit threads of people like leaking from stuff they've seen around the set. He was mind blown by that. And then I'm like, and even you could look at people who go tourism around hotels and find cast members. I use tourism as like a weird verb there, but you could even use that to figure out where some people have been. So unless it's like two people in a room talking to each other, or fake, which apparently could still be a possibility, or something that's like a dragon that isn't actually there, we have better guesses about productions, we have better guesses thanks to production of how season 7 might work out. That's sort of what we're working on. Yeah. But I don't know how far that takes us into we know what happens.
We think we know what happens.
Yeah, there's some stuff that it's hard to disprove that feels like it could be in the right direction. But there's not a lot that we know for sure outside of locations and people being at those locations.
I would say this. If you are sailing willingly into the heart of the storm, there's a lot of storm. There's a lot of storm. We don't know if it's going to kill us, but there's a lot of it.
Joanna's psyched.
Did I go too far with the nautical metaphor?
No, I like it. And like, you're like, lash yourselves to the mast.
Right. We have now tied ourselves. See, and that's the thing. That's why we have to have this whole segment, is because we are the ones who tied ourselves to the mast, yeah, cut out the tongues of everyone around us, and flew all the way into the storm. And there's just no way to unknow that stuff. So here we go. Let's do it. I got some questions. You guys want some more questions?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, this email comes from Brian, and he says, I think the most intriguing and unknown storyline for those who have been spoiled or have not been spoiled, I don't know what he means there, coming into the season is Bran's. We see him coming back south of the wall, meeting up with what looks to be a maester, and warging into some ravens in the trailers, but that's about all we know. So what kind of role do you see Bran playing in season 7? So Joanna, what do you think? What's happening with old Bran?
As far as we know, Bran, I think, is in kind of a catatonic state this season. Like, that he comes back. He comes back south of the wall with Mira. He goes to Winterfell. Mira, I mean, I'm just going to drop these spoilers. Boom, boom, boom. We are
in the storm.
Mira goes back amongst the Kreding men or whatever. And
maybe to fetch her father who knows
stuff.
Yeah,
Mira F's off. She's like, I dragged this body all the way south of the wall and all I got was a stupid t-shirt. Like, Mira's...
Fuck this, I'm going home.
Mira's gone.
She like drops him off at the gates of Winterfell. Doesn't even go inside for a hello.
She like leaves a little note on him, like in Baby Driver.
Found this baby. Yeah.
So,
sorry about your Hodor.
Yeah, sorry about your Hodor and your Rickon and your Shaggy Dog. She doesn't know about that. Anyway, Bran's going back to Winterfell. Bran will be among the Winterfell coterie this season. He will be still envisioning things, but I think largely sort of not very human seeming, I think, is the gist of it. Like that these visions have taken a toll, sort of like the Three-Eyed Raven, that he's just like kind of, he's no longer, I don't know if I want to call him the warm, cuddly human we once knew. He's
so at some point, Bran might only be able to say one word.
Maybe.
I feel like it's only fair.
But those visions will no doubt be useful. We did see in the trailer what looks like he might be warging into a flock of birds flying above, and it looks like the Night's King's like, I see you, buddy. I put my mark on you. I see you spying on me. So those are possibilities. But yeah, so visions for Bran, catatonic sort of state for Bran, new wheels for Bran.
Good old wheels. He gets to be the guy at the, what's the line in Spider-Man? It's the guy at the computer.
Yeah, yeah, and the guy in the chair. He's the guy in the chair.
Yes.
Yeah, so Bran is definitely the guy in the chair for, like, potentially John's, like, op. And, yeah, so all of that's happening. Someone did bring up a very good point. If Bran weren't in a catatonic state in a wheelchair and being super weird, he would be a threat to the authority of Jon Snow and Sansa because he is technically like the role heir of Ned Stark, right? He's next in line. So he should be the Lord of Winterfell and perhaps the King of the North, but nobody's going to elect the sleeping kid in the chair. So there you go.
Uh-oh. That's ableist.
It's not ableist. If he were awake in the chair, he would have a chance, but he's asleep. So
we should also mention that there's a lot to be made of things that we talked about last year, which was Bran has the mark of the Night King on him, and that broke the magic of the Wyrewood village underground lair thing. And he is going, we've seen in the trailer already, he is going to go through the wall and be back at Winterfell, which will, we assume, break the magic of the wall, which will allow, you know, the Night King to maybe, like, bring it all down at the end or something. Mm. Or that's probably going to happen. Yep. So.
Once again, storm. The speed of how long it takes to march around north of the wall, I think, is going to be a little fudged for dramatic purposes.
Here's the idea. I think it's
going
to be funny, though.
I think here's the idea. They were fucking around north of the wall because they couldn't get south of the wall, right? Because of the magical protections. This season, they can't, like, as soon as Bran crosses, the Night King's going to be like, bloop, my pizza's done, or whatever. And, like, I don't know what that was in reference to. And so, it's time to go. But, like, we see them in the trailer, and we know this from the leak, like, fighting Jon and stuff like that. So, you know, it's going to take them 7 episodes, or, like, Bran gets south of the wall by episode 2, right? So it's going to take them 6 episodes to try to get to the wall, basically. And in part of that is going to be pushed back from Jon and his brave companions. So that doesn't seem crazy to me. If they were,
I have a theory about this that probably isn't true, but would be awesome if it was true. If, like, at some point they figure out, John figures out that they know where the horn is that could bring down the wall.
Oh, the
and
horn!
It's a race to get the horn before the Night's King gets it, and that's what creates this battle north of the wall. At this point, I might just be fanficking a better version of the show, so, like, be prepared for that.
I think the horn is... Oh, man, I forgot that I am, like, Joanna Wet Blanket Robinson. I don't think the horn's ever showing up on the show.
You don't think that... Well, so I'm still pro-horn in two different regions, because I don't understand why Euron is so tough and is going to make Ramsay look like a little kid if he doesn't have something cool like a horn that controls dragons. But that's not what we're talking about
here.
He's
just going to kill a bunch of ladies. That's what he's going to do.
I did see this is off topic, but I did see the Cersei returns a gift thing, and I was like, ooh, she's going to send a sand snake to Dorne, like a dead one, wrapped around with a necklace wrapped in her mouth, and I don't know, it doesn't matter. But I think it would be great if there was, like, a horn side plot, like, if it was the horn was, like, the MacGuffin, and the Night King ultimately wins the battle at the end and gets the horn and blows it, and the wall comes down, and they roll over
what
the wall.
What if it was, like, more of a gauntlet, like an infinite gauntlet?
Like, it had, like, stones
in
it?
Yeah, that he wore to, like...
that he had to get to defeat the Jon Ventures?
Yeah, we need 5 more seasons to get all the stones.
Right.
That's what the spinoffs are for.
Actually,
one stone in each spinoff.
The 6 episodes of season 8 are just one per stone, and then the final one, and they're all feature length, so it's 6 movies.
They'll be like, take that, Marvel.
Our infinity stones. I mean, I don't think that's going to... That probably won't happen, but that'd be a cooler version in my mind. Moving on. Next question. We got multiple emails from both Peyton and Mike. Mike's... This is... They were both on the same wavelength here, so I'm going to read Mike's. So that I was curious as to what you think the most likely way Jon Snow will learn of his true parentage. Maybe it will be Bran, maybe it will be Sam. His personal theory is that Littlefinger or Varys already know. As he points out, in the Tower of Joy scene, the show goes out of its way to show one of the midwives in the room, who's probably named Wyla. I don't know. That's a book thing, right? And someone like Littlefinger or Varys would be able to track down such a person, despite Ned's efforts to hide her, and that could be an advantage, an information advantage in the upcoming season. So do we think that it's going to be Bran or Sam, Littlefinger, Varys, Howland Reed? I think the production spoilers we've seen so far, it's like a Bran and Sam thing, right?
Yeah, it's a Tarly Stark joint. yeah, it's Brandon. Well,
they're putting together a research paper.
More significant. Like, is this even, this is my question to our listeners. Is this even fun? Cause they're asking us to speculate and we're like, boom, here's what we know. you know, they're, you know, like,
I'm always going to preface it with, here's what we think we know.
Okay. Here's what we think we know. That Bran and Sam, like that Sam and Gilly are going to get half of the equation down in Old Town, which has to do with like whether or not Jon is actually a bastard or whether he's a legitimate Targaryen. And then Bran has the other piece of the puzzle, which is, you know, that Jon, that Rhaegar and Lyanna are Jon's parents. Okay. So all of that is true. But I think the real information here is that Jon will not know until season 8.
Yes.
Okay. Or he won't know at all, because they're going to get killed by White Walkers.
Right. Or, like, actually, what I was alluding to in the calm that I can now fully say in the storm is, like, if Jon starts banging Daenerys, which he will, and then they, like, come back to Winterfell, and Jon's like, look, my girlfriend, isn't she pretty? And Bran's like, shit, that's his aunt. Do I tell him? Do I tell? I'm not going to tell him. They're so happy. They look so happy.
That
why,
actually answers
why would I tell
my
them?
Other... That sort of answers my other big question about this, which is you know, regardless of who figures it out, why would any of these characters care at this
Sam
point?
Sam would get all flustered and be like, well, the Targaryens have been incestual for thousands of years.
But also, like, John...
terrible Sam.
So, like, let's imagine we live in the North in Westeros. John's already king of the North. No one cares that he's a bastard anymore. So, like, why are they still looking for this? So I feel like maybe this show's going to dig into the Azor Ahai thing a little bit more. Because otherwise it's like, I mean, Bran knows this stuff, but he's basically a cucumber. So, like, why would Sam care? Why does it matter? He should just be researching Valyrian steel and dragonglass and whether dragonfire
stop
works.
Reading the gossip papers. Well, actually, I think technically it's Gilly who finds this out, so let's not be too harsh on Gilly, but like I think it's Gilly who randomly reads that Rhaegar and Lyanna actually got married. This was a source of much heated debate at Con of Thrones. We found out when we went to go play trivia at Con of Thrones that the panel beforehand had been an R plus L equals J, and that like basically a fist fight. Oh no. Okay. Almost a fist fight broke out over whether or not Rhaegar could like effectively divorce, Elia and legitimately marry Lyanna and legitimize Jon, not actually named John, as his son.
Yeah.
If that's possible in the bylaws of Westerosi, you know, lore. So if you're listening and have some
don't
opinions,
you guys all want to go to Con of Thrones next year?
There was like a legit fight apparently about this, like a heated one. I think that shows lack of moderation, but that's fine. But I think that you raise a good question. Why would anyone care? And I guess maybe why people would care is if Sam was like, maybe it's the opposite of what I said. Maybe if Sam's like, John, I need to tell you something. You're fucking your aunt. Or
right.
Yeah.
That actually does make sense.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way.
Yeah, buddy.
Remember that? You know, we talked about sex before.
I got bummer news for you. Your hot new blonde girlfriend, also your aunt. Bummer.
Yeah.
I will say this about the, like, John and Daenerys hooking up thing. You know, I think we kind of, a lot of us expected that it was coming this way, but I do like the way that George R. R. Martin laid track where, you know, Daenerys had a first love who, you know, raped her or whatever, but Khal Drogo, and then John had a first love, Ygritte, and then those buddies died several seasons ago. So, like, we're not upset if John moves on to Daenerys. He's had time to mourn Ygritte. And then it's not as if Daenerys gave two shits about Dario. So, you know, like, it's time for them to find each other. And I like the pacing of that, you know?
Do you think there's some magic in Targaryens mating? Because remember when Daenerys had the baby the first time and it was, like, all messed up? Or was that just, like, a blood magic thing?
Oh, no. Like, I think Daenerys... Okay, this is for speculation.
Can she have a baby with Jon Snow?
This is speculation. I think Daenerys is definitely going to get pregnant with Jon Snow's baby. Because so much has been made about how she can't have kids. And so it's just going to be, like, some salt and smoke, blood magic, fun times, two promised ones
She's
having gonna sex.
She's going to give birth in, like, something burning down. Yeah. Born of fire. Yeah. It's going to get real literal. If it gets real literal about the prophecy, I don't know if I like that. But okay. At least we can say that it was right. Speaking of things that were in the books, our next question comes from Pat, who we met at Con of Thrones and who's amazing and
awesome.
And his
lovely wife, Lisa.
And his wife is fantastic.
Indeed.
Lisa was great. Pat wanted to know, in not so many words, how much weight should fans put on things George R. R. Martin says about things that aren't in the book and probably won't ever be addressed? So, like, is there a George? Like, how much should we buy George's?
What, like, what's an example of this? I'm having trouble sussing what Pat's trying to say here. Like, is Pat trying to say, did this come from a tweet from Pat?
No, this was an email.
Okay, well, usually Pat gives, like, five paragraphs of supporting information.
Oh, there. Hold on.
Okay.
I've got them.
Okay. I'll let you stall while I'll say this. That George speaking to, like, things that happen on the show that he didn't write, I think usually he's very circumspect about that. Like, he doesn't talk about it because he's just sort of like, it's not my story. He'll just talk about it in the vaguer thing of, like, kind of disavowal, like, I didn't write it this way, the butterfly effect or dragon wings flapping or whatever his thing that he likes to say, like, all of that to remove himself from any sort of controversy. That's the most he's ever, like, directly addressed changes, I think, in that way. That's my impression. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I definitely think every time he falls back on his butterfly effect, or because they've changed things in the past for the show, therefore the echoes of those changes are going to significantly change the story, it is him, I don't know, like, sort of having a tantrum. I don't want to say having a tantrum, but in the world where he has to insert himself in somebody else's narratives, that's when he makes himself known, I think, and that's when we could think that maybe either if he hasn't already plotted them out to be different, he definitely plans on in the future plotting them out to be different.
Mm-hmm. Some additional context, so that I don't completely ruin Pat's email, in which he said, usually George is cagey about things, but sometimes he makes statements for things that aren't in the books. I bring this up because at the religions panel at Con of Thrones, someone reported that Dany's fireproofness at Drogo's pyre was because Miri Maz Dur was trying to cast a spell to protect herself, and it saved Dany instead. So we're kind of back to the whole Daenerys, like,
the, like, fire thing
isn't fireproof.
If George gives us a rule, how seriously should we take that for the show? I think the answer is not at all seriously.
I mean, like, not at all seriously, but I think Dan and David last season, when Daenerys was fireproof once again in that hut, are like, yeah, in our version, Daenerys is fireproof. Someone did ask me a question the other day. So we know Daenerys is fireproof. It's not just the magic of the sacrificial blood magic of the pyre, which is what George said protected Daenerys in the first book. Mm-hmm. You know, Daenerys is fireproof, but I don't think Viserys is fireproof, right?
Right. And there's no reason to assume that Jon.
Well, but yeah, and that was someone's question, is like, do you think that the burning of his hand in season one is an error, like a continuity error? And I was like, no, I don't think so. I think Jon is not fireproof necessarily.
But it also could be a Melisandre wasn't wearing her necklace in the tub in season 3 type of thing, where it's like, well, they just didn't think that far ahead, which is kind of weird because that was kind of the whole thing, is they've been thinking that far ahead, but that's not relevant. We talked about this last week, I think, where we really have to kind of divorce the two at this point, where the last 4 seasons of the show are completely different beasts. So I think that rules of the universe, that applies.
But, you know, if it turns out Jon is not fireproof, right? Like, if he gets burned this season or next. And then some people who are, like, casual show watchers are like, but he's a Targaryen, he should be fireproof. I think then we could be like, hey, no, George has said all Targaryens are not fireproof. The show has made it clear that Daenerys is in all circumstances, but I guess Jon's not.
That's true. And if I were to lean one way or the other, I would say the show would simplify and make him fireproof. Just, he's also fireproof.
Yeah, probably.
Because it's easier for the average person who has no idea that there are production spoilers to understand and follow. All right, cool. This is a good one from Johnny. What are the chances a Red Priest or Priestess resurrects someone this season? I'm going to extend this to resurrect someone again, like period, like through the entire rest of the series, which we don't know anything about season 8 yet. So do you think that that a Red Priest or Priestess will do some kind of resurrection?
I think there's a chance that Thoros does, but it either doesn't end like he expects it to, or he doesn't get to finish trying to do it.
Like, we see Beric die and he tries it and it just doesn't work.
And then
or the Night King beats him to it and Beric comes up with blue eyes. Whoa, dark.
Something like that.
And then when he lights his sword, it's a blue flame.
It's blue. Yes. Oh, that's a great theory.
See, we still can't have theories this season.
Right. It just also has to be
like,
and this is the scene before John and Danny
Bone. I think we know that Beric's going to die. So.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely on the level of people who will probably die.
Yeah. And that seems like, you know, so in terms of the John Stark Avengers that go north of the wall. You know, it's Beric, it's Thoros, it's Tormund, it's the Hound, and it's Gendry. And I have to say, if Beric and Thoros die, that's like, those are our easiest sacrifices, right? Flaming Sword aside, those are the characters we spent the least amount of time with, care about the least. So,
well, if Benjen actually does show up, then that I'll throw him in the don't care.
Uncle Benjen could go down.
Yeah, sure. Benjen can go down too. Those three can go down, and then like their sally forth will have felt like there were actually stakes when you actually look closer and you're like, oh, no one I really cared about died.
Right. But 3 named characters died.
Oh, his sword was flaming. It was so cool. I don't think we're not going to see any Melisandre do anything this season, like resurrection wise.
As far as
and
we
then
know.
I don't think we're going to spend much time in Essos. Period. So I don't think we're going to see anyone like Kinvara or anything like that.
Yeah, that's another good question that was not part of this email, but like that Kinvara, is she coming back at some point? Is she with Daenerys' people? Is that ever going to be a thing? Like the Red Priestesses trying to exert power over Daenerys or influence Daenerys? Or are they just out there being like, follow Daenerys, she's our queen? I feel like that's not their game. They want to be close to power.
Well, she is the power, right?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Is
maybe,
she the one?
Maybe
is she the prince who was promised, or is it Jon?
If they were out there proselytizing her for all of season 7 and we don't see it, and then they show up like fucking Knights of the Vale in season 8, like, I don't know, flying on broomsticks or something, and they're like, we are the Red Witches! that's, once again, a His Dark Materials spoiler.
What? Seriously?
No, there's just witches. There's cool, sexy witches in His Dark Materials.
Oh,
have you guys not read that?
I should read that.
Those books are so good.
No idea.
Eva Green plays one in the movie. Anyway, I don't know what the deal is with the Red Priestess is.
What if Eva Green shows up as a Red Priestess in season
eight. Into
Let's
it.
Be real. Into it's real it. Fucked that Eva Green has not been cast in Game of Thrones already.
Right.
I guess she was already on Merlin, which is, or whatever that was called, Camelot. I can't remember what it was called, which is close, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
Eva Green season eight. Eva Green for like the lady who seduces the Night King with those sparkly eyes.
Yes. Because we will need some backstory about the Night King.
We got his story. He got stabbed in he doesn't get a fun girlfriend. He got stabbed in the heart with some obsidian. And then
yeah, that's too
he
bad.
Was real evil.
I will say that this question, it speaks to me in the sense that this is something I'm tracking that we really don't have a whole lot of information about, which I think is more of a it's not going to happen until season eight type of thing. But I am curious to see if there are any, you know, Red Priest, Priestess things around Daenerys, because it really feels like there should be, and if there isn't, and then it comes up at the end, that's going to be super weird. And I'm really curious as to how much further they'll like push the Azor Ahai prophecy. Like, is that going to be part of Sam's research, or is that going to be part of, like, will Daenerys eventually learn that that's what she might be, or that's what Jon might be? And so I think that's really fascinating. Those are the details that have me fascinated, like, beyond the sort of big ideas that we think we know. So there's that. Cool. Dave, do you think someone's going to be resurrected?
No. I like our idea of a failed Thoros attempt, but
nice.
I don't think we're big on Red Priestesses this season.
Okay, so this next one we think is fairly easy to answer. It comes from Brandon, aka Mr. Crimson 99, who I believe we also met at Con of Thrones, right?
Yeah, we did.
This one dives into some spoilers. Will all of Dany's dragons make it through season 7, and will we see them go north? I believe those two questions are related.
This is the number one leak that people can't seem to help talking about, as if they're speculating. I'm gonna call out right now, former Hodor actor Sam Coleman on the stage
that was so good.
On the stage of Con of Thrones, and like someone from the audience is like, "Who do you want to see die next?" And Sam Coleman's like, "Well, I think one of Daenerys' dragons is gonna die. I mean, that kid's great. I like that kid a lot." But he just fully dropped this spoiler that we know, which is one of the dragons, Viserion, I believe, is going to die as Daenerys swoops in to save Jon. And his friends north of the wall with her dragons. She flies in. They take down one of the dragons and kill it. And then the Night King resurrects it. And now I believe it's an ice dragon. So, or it's at least his steed. And so that's a spoiler we know. But seriously, people need to like chill out around people who are not spoiled for the season about this particular thing.
Well, and I think that there's a lot of people who think that this is sort of safe ground, because there was a lot of stuff about like the mythology of there being an ice dragon in the wall, which could just be a metaphor at this point for the Night King will get a dragon. So I think that people think like, oh, ice dragons are a thing that people have talked about, so I can still... This is why we have the storm, really. It's because you can't know these things and then bullshit your way through some speculation.
Right. Well, it was like heavily speculated.
Gonna die.
It was like heavily speculated, and then that timepiece, which Joanna pulled out and brought to our attention, had the author talked about seeing Daenerys doing her dragon riding rig and having like snow thrown at her, and that was the first indication that the dragons were actually going to go north.
Yeah,
which just lends credibility.
That was a big old spoiler that he snuck in there. Speaking of, okay, well, two things I want to say. If you Google Ice Dragon Game of Thrones poster, I'm sure most of you have seen it at this point, but this is a fake poster that was floating around a long time ago. A season 7 poster, and it shows the Night King astride a sort of gray white dragon who's breathing blue fire and sort of sitting on top of the wall, and says the end begins. It's amazing art. This is basically what we believe is going to happen. This is a fake fan poster, but it's a beautiful one, so you might want to check that out. The other thing I want to say in terms of like legit people dropping spoilers, can you believe that Game of Thrones veteran costume designer Michelle Clafton just casually in an interview with Uproxx tossed in the fact that A, Jon Snow is going to meet Daenerys, and B, Jon Snow is going to meet Cersei. Like, in, she was just like, well, I designed this cloak for Kit, and, you know, it's a very wildling, over-the-wall sort of style, and he doesn't wear it when he meets Daenerys because we want to see him vulnerable, but he does wear it when he meets Cersei so we can see him imposing. And I was like, what the fuck did you just say, Michelle Clapton? Like, that lady is getting slapped around by HBO right now, I can guarantee you. And she's like, listen, she's like, would you like to see my mountain of Emmys? And they're like, fair enough, Michelle Clapton. Okay, you get a pass.
Yeah, they got a different costume designer last year and had to bring her back.
Yeah, because it was real bad.
For the end.
Because Miss Sandy was wearing, like, palazzo pants, and it was bad. So, yeah.
You know what I think that means? Michelle Clapton is the Storm.
Michelle Clapton is the Storm. Michelle Clapton has plot armor.
Right. She has all kinds of armor. I will say this about dragons. Obviously, we think we know what we know about the dragons. I am curious to see, we know that there's going to be a battle at, is it at Highgarden or Casterly Rock?
Both.
Doesn't actually.
Both. Dos.
Okay. So we know that there's a battle in which Lannisters encounter dragons.
Oh, no, that's sort of like on the field somewhere.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's in the Reach, Westerlands area. Uh-huh. So I'm curious as to see, again, details of, if there is something that the Lannisters, I believe I read in something where it's like they have like a giant catapult gun thing that Qyburn designs.
Yeah, Qyburn has like a dragon feller.
But I'm curious to see if...
that's a stupid thing to say, a dragon feller.
I'm curious to see how effective that is and if it creates stakes. Because I think, honestly, if they like have this thing and they shoot at a dragon and they miss, and then the dragon just burns all of them, that kind of sucks for a battle. Like, I think it would be interesting if, like, Rhaegal got, like, winged and had to be, like, down for a little while, and then Daenerys loses one. So by the end, it's just, like, her and Drogon, and she's, you know, puts her in a more vulnerable position because, as one of our other questioners asked us, it's like, Daenerys seems to have all the chips at this point.
Yeah.
So this season has to knock her down, at least militarily, a few pegs.
Yeah, so the things that Cersei has to fight back are this dragon feller. Sorry, it's so stupid.
I'm pleased with it now because you're pleased with it.
That Qyburn made. And Euron Greyjoy to, like, fuck with the Ironborn.
I guess. I still don't know what Euron's thing is.
He likes to kill people.
He's just
people.
Like a dick. Like,
he's a dick.
His superpower is he's a dick.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it so far. I don't know, strategy. Well, I think there's been some implication that Jaime will rise this season as a, and this is not just my Jaime bias talking, as a very clever general. So he may not be the swordsman that he once was, but he's his like sort of strategery will rise to the top. There's also some implication that, you know, Daenerys will get angry with Tyrion because she feels like he's holding back because he doesn't want to go full force against his siblings. So, like, that maybe...
Or at the very least, his brother.
Right. Yeah, fuck his sister.
right. I feel like Tyrion would kill Cersei.
So that's something that, you know, almost Cersei has on her side, is maybe Tyrion's reticence to destroy Jaime. So...
That's interesting. You know. See, the details are very interesting to me.
Oh, good.
Yes, very interesting. I don't care about the big stuff. I want to see if, like, a dragon gets clipped by the dragon feller.
This is so funny.
Which now sounds like we're on a porch in the
that's
deep
what
south.
I mean, like, dragon feller, like
you that, see that dragon feller.
You saw that show, right, with all the boobs, and then the dragon feller came.
Exactly. Oh my god.
Oh wow, see, aren't you guys glad you came into the storm with us?
But here's the thing, if Viserion is taken down by the White Walkers, and if Rhaegal is even, like, clipped by the Dragonfeller, then that's...
It's hard to have that word
out
there.
Is that sort of like Beric and Thoros dying? Like, how much do we really care about Viserion and Rhaegal? You know?
Well, I mean it's just emotionally,
it's just the Drogon show. Let's be honest. Daenerys is going to be like, I didn't really care about those kids anyway.
Do you think... Here's a better question. Do you guys think that all the dragons make it through the series, or will the magic of the world die with the night? If they defeat the night, let's assume they defeat the Night's King. do the dragons make it to the end?
Well, you mean one of them?
I think if Jon Snow has to sadly take the place of the Night's King, I think he gets to ride the dragon because he's a Targaryen. So I think he would get Viserion if they all survived.
Or like, let's assume that the bittersweet part of the season 8 ending is like a bunch of things have to be sacrificed in order for Westeros to survive. Which I would put Jon Snow in that category of like the sacrificial bittersweet lamb. It's like he knocks up Daenerys, then gets killed.
Yeah, that feels real to me. Jon Snow puts a baby in Daenerys and then dies.
But do the dragons make it?
The other thing about this may not seem like it's an answer to a question, but it is, which is this. You know, you and I hosted this amazing, incredibly researched dragon panel at Con of Thrones.
Oh, deeply researched.
And one of the things that sort of we recalled as we conducted it is that dragon's blood is used in forging of Valyrian steel. So, you know, if they figure that shit out and they're smart, they'll like have someone go around with buckets and like pick up whatever Drogon and Rhaegal like leak onto the battlefield. But if they're like really hardcore, maybe they kill a dragon to make more Valyrian steel.
Ooh, I like that.
And sorry, hate to break it to you, Rhaegal, but that would be you, buddy.
Because people were all sniffly when Daenerys like locked him up. But like, what if like Daenerys is like slit one's throat?
She's like, fire up the forges, fellas.
Gendry's like, okay.
All right.
I keep envisioning this happening. Like, I keep envisioning some mighty forging of Valyrian steel happening for season 8. And it always, to me, looks like the creation of the Uruk-hai in Lord of the Rings. Like, they're down like in the like mud somewhere, and I'm going to need a lot of drums happening and lots of fire and, like, cauldrons and chains. So, and Gendry, master blacksmith in charge of everything.
It's going to be like a season 8 bottle episode where it's just like Sam it starts with like Sam in a chair reading a book about Valyrian steel. And like nothing else happens except they just make a shitload of Valyrian steel.
Well, like right in the middle, we could stop for a Nine Inch Nails song just to be.
I have a new vision, which is not the fighting Uruk-hai. It's a cook from Breaking Bad. So we get like like a really dreamy, pretty, slow-mo Gendry working at his forge.
That Blue's Persuasion.
Yes,
song.
Crystal Blue Persuasion.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds great. Right. I say let's do that instead of whatever they have planned.
Okay.
All right, Dave, this question is really a Dave question.
Yay.
Oh.
Because you, above all of the other people that I know, are able to get into the mind of Littlefinger.
Ah, yes.
So, Vanessa emailed us and asked, what is Littlefinger's new game if he can't use the North as a stepping stone to the Iron Throne, per his original plan? Do you think he'll attempt to make good on his plan B and make a deal with Cersei, or follow up on the deal with Cersei back from season 5, or will he hand... Basically, the deal was to hand Sansa over to Cersei in exchange for being Warden of the North. Vanessa says that conversation still makes her nervous to this day. Or in what other way could Littlefinger betray the Starks at this point that could possibly get him closer to the Iron Throne? Now, we should say that we're pretty sure Littlefinger isn't going to make it.
Right.
So it's like, it's tense being in the storm, man.
But...
He's got a whole season to enact a plan, though.
But yeah, so let's forget about what we think we know about where he ends up, and let's think about his mindset. So what do you think, Littlefinger, what's his plan now?
Well, he needs to make sure that Sansa, A, trusts him enough to still listen to things he said and not have Brienne kill him, and two, is left in control of Winterfell and Wardeness of the North if Jon Snow is going to, you know, go off and fight some war against undead people. Super did not like the chanting at the end of last season, the whole King of the North chant. Littlefinger was not into it because his power play is having Sansa where she needs to be. That being said, I wouldn't put it past him to, while he's simultaneously trying to play any Starks that show up to Winterfell off each other to put Sansa at the top, that he might also be in some sort of contact with Cersei for various backdoor deals that at the very least would keep Cersei off his back as he attempts something. I don't know what sort of trust would be needed to be shown for that sort of thing, or Cersei might just be too busy dealing with the other houses to not give Littlefinger a chance. But I think either way, there's going to be some past things that Littlefinger knows about that he's going to try to use to wedge in between the Starks, whether that be true parentages or things that Sansa had to write while she was still engaged to Joffrey. Just a whole bunch of stuff to destabilize the Stark name. So if need be, he could still execute both deals at the last second.
I do think on a theoretical level, again, deep into the details, if Littlefinger's end is ultimately just like Sansa has him killed because he tries to pit her against Jon, that's kind of a boring way for Littlefinger to go out. I almost like the idea of like Sansa finding a letter where Littlefinger was still writing to Cersei about how he's going to be, you know, Warden of the North or whatever, and that's what ultimately undoes him, because I don't know, I feel like Littlefinger is complex enough and smart enough, and even in the trailer he's talking about fighting all the battles all at once, all the time. If it's really just like he tries to, you know, deconstruct the Stark bond, and that's what he gets done in for, I don't know if I like that. What do you guys think?
I mean, yeah, go ahead, Jenna.
Yeah. I think I disagree with, maybe you're right, Neil, but I think what the show, certainly based on the trailer where we hear Sansa say, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives. It's very much about, I think what we're going to see is conflict for a while, because we've talked already about Bran coming back to Winterfell and being a cucumber in a chair. Arya is also coming back to Winterfell, right? And these mm-hmm. girls have never gotten along. And, you know, Ned touchingly lectured Arya in season one about how she really needs to, like, get along with her sister because they're all each other has and stuff like that. And I think that is what Littlefinger is, the function he's going to serve is first to further divide these women, and then they unite to take him down. And I think that will be satisfying. To see these girls who've never gotten along and certainly have reason in their adult lives maybe to not get along, you know, find the common ground and close the Stark ranks and take him out.
Yeah, it is interesting to think about what Arya's mindset is coming back to Winterfell.
I think
she doesn't really know what's been going on.
Right, but she loved Jon and she hated Sansa growing up, right? And so if she shows up and she sees Sansa at odds with Jon at all, she's going to be Team Jon hardcore, right? So she's going to be like, oh, Sansa, up to your old shit again. you sucked as when we were kids and you suck now and I don't like you. You know what I mean? And so I think them coming together as sisters is going to be one of the most potentially emotionally satisfying angles of the season.
Yeah, and I do think that another one of the interesting things that I've found, or at least that I hope will be interesting as we live here in the storm, is that we forget, I think, what each character, as these characters come back together, we forget what they really know and what they really don't know. So, like, how much does Arya know about Littlefinger's role in taking Ned down? How much does the show even care about this stuff? But, like, Arya would care if she knew that.
Right.
So I think that's really going to be fascinating. I'm fascinated in the stuff that isn't in this leaky ship. It's all the, like, conversations that were, you know, inside. So there's that. Okay. So, yeah. So hopefully Littlefinger's downfall is, I don't know, at least interesting. But, you know, it's about time the show does something terrible to a man to serve the story of two women. So
Hey.
Okay, I have more questions. This one is an email from Reese. I'm going to shorten this question down to, what is Gendry's role in all of this? So, Joanna, what do we know about Gendry and how he fits? I guess the other big question Reese wanted to know was, like, does Gendry have a claim to anything? Or is he just showing back up to, like, hang out with the boys?
I think one thing that we can expect to see is sort of a, we know that he's going to fight with Jon north of the wall.
Because Warhammer,
with his
boom.
Warhammer. So one thing that we can expect to see is a nice sort of mirror reflection of Ned and Robert in Robert's Rebellions, and then Jon and Gendry fighting side by side. You know what I mean? Having like the next generation of these men, even though Jon isn't Ned's son, having the next generation sort of as brothers in arms. So I think that that. That's the main function that I think that Gendry's going to serve. I don't think he poses any threat to Cersei's claim or the Baratheon line. You know, like, Joffrey was banana cakes if he thought that Gendry, could really challenge his position. Because Gendry's he's a bastard, you know? Like, he is. Like, I love him.
We called them the Bastard Avengers.
The Bastard Avengers. The Bastard Executioners. So, well, that was a short-lived show. That's not a good reference.
are there any former Baratheon bannermen to be had now that the Baratheons and the Tyrells are without a head?
Most of Stannis's men died, right?
Yeah.
So, well, right, but at that point, I guess
a lot of them had fled. So if Gendry eventually, like in season 8, wants to become like Lord of the Stormlands and like bring the Baratheon bannermen to heel, like I could see that happening. Like I really love the idea of Jon like one by one planting his like shaggy bastard companions, like, you know, Tormund and Gendry in these positions of power. Ditto Bronn, you know, like I expect Bronn, if he survives everything, he's going to become a lord. So like that the new generation of lords of Westeros are all these like, like bastards and
these
wildlings.
Bastards.
Yeah, exactly. So.
I would like to read some of the vassals of House Baratheon.
I'm ready.
For the comedic effect of, then you could just think about what happened to their houses. So, and this isn't all of them, this is just some of them. So before we get an email about it. House Dondarrion is a Stormlands vassal. House Selmy, which is Daenerys and Selmy. House Tarth. Musgood, they actually did mention, I think they died with Stannis. I'm trying to think of the ones that, House Trant. So Meryn Trant's family. We don't want any of them.
No.
House Connington, which didn't even make it into the show.
John Connington.
And House Seaworth.
Oh.
So that's pretty much the Lords of the Stormlands as far as the show is concerned. So it's really just Brienne's dad.
Yeah. Well, and so I just want this to happen so Davos could adopt him.
Oh,
and then,
it's like Mathos never mattered at all.
Yeah.
House Seaworth rules. I mean, House Seaworth basically at this point is sort of the default head of the Stormlands.
Yeah, he'll go back to that lonely island he left his wife on, be like, I've brought you another son.
He's got all the abs. You're welcome.
He's very good at building things. Cool. All right, so I think I have one more question that I would like to read. And this is a Twitter question from at Garrett Vernon. This, to me, feels like a big spoiler. So it's good that we're in the storm. Will Jaime kill Cersei? Will he die too? If not, what is his role in the war against the dead?
Spoiler alert. Jaime, this season, Jaime will not kill Cersei. Cersei survives the season, which a lot of people are not expecting, but I'm glad.
Right, which has made me mad.
I'm glad. I want Cersei fucking around down south next season.
Valenquar, season 7.
Season 8. Patience, buddy. Boo. But
yeah, we have to. There's 6 feature length films coming.
There will be a final breaking point for Jaime this season, and he will, for real this time, break with Cersei and I believe ride north. And there are these. This is why I think Jaime Lannister is the most interesting character of season 7, because he's got these angels sort of tugging at him in like the shape of Brienne and Tyrion, who are like trying to appeal to his better nature. And Jaime's like, no, I am Team Cersei. I have been my whole life. This is where I belong. This is the right thing to do, is to be on Cersei's side. This is what we do. And then by the end of the season, he finally sees her for who she is, when she sort of threatens to... She basically says, let the army of the dead pick off my enemies, and then I will deal with their bedraggled remains, basically. And Jaime's like, I'm not into that. Not into not fighting against the zombie invasion. And he fucks off north into, let's just assume, the welcoming arms of Brienne of Tarth. So, you know.
I do, and I like this for several reasons. One is, it kind of fits with the books.
Yeah.
And it fits with a theory of the books where Brienne actually, I guess, recruits Jaime instead of kills him for Lady Stoneheart.
Yeah.
But I also, like, we talked about earlier how this season will see the rise of Jaime Lannister as a general. And I think that is kind of one thing that the Army of the North doesn't really have.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, Daenerys is like... battle-worn dudes were like Ser Jorah and Ser Barristan, and I guess we could talk about Ser Jorah in a second, but Daenerys isn't a general.
Right.
Like, she's not a battle commander.
She's a dragon rider.
Right. Tyrion is sort of a general.
He's a more strategist.
He's a really good defensive coordinator. Jon is not a general. He is a leader of small groups of people who survive being almost killed by the White Walkers. And he's a guy who rides into the middle of a battle stupidly, but still somehow wins.
Yeah, that's true. I was about to give him credit for Watchers on the Wall, and then I remember Battle of the Bastards.
So when it... Jon's a good motivator. He's a good inspirational coach.
He's a figurehead. Yeah, he's Coach, right. Coach Taylor. You're right. Okay.
But they need somebody to think of clever ways to defeat a massive army of ice... zombies. Oh,
I'm so excited for Jaime to do that. My boy!
And Jaime is strong candidate for the offensive coordinator of Daenerys' football team army.
We can't talk about sports. You need to stop doing
that. It's a lot. It's just... I feel like I just walked into a sports metaphor. Anyway.
Exactly.
So I like that idea.
Yeah.
What do we know about Ser Jorah? Like, what we...
Dave?
I think the thing in the trailer was his arm, right?
Oh, yeah. He ends up in Old Town, and through some sort of cutting-involved process, is cured by good old Sam of the Grayscale.
Does he go north with Sam? I feel like...
No.
See, this is the problem with this whole, like, leak thing, is, like, I read all this stuff, like, several times, and it's all a blur now.
He's going back to Daenerys.
Of course he's going back to Daenerys. That'll be a great moment.
Yeah.
If executed
if
properly.
If Jack Bender comes back to direct it, it'll be fucking great. Yeah. Sam cures Jorah, and then Sam goes back to Winterfell. They go back to their respective Azor Ahai figures, right? Sam goes to find Jon, I believe, and Jorah goes to find Daenerys. So.
But they're together, what?
Yeah. And that grayscale's cured, and so then the question is, why did he have grayscale?
That's actually a really good question.
If he's just fine going forward, then I have questions.
Yeah, I guess it's like, if grayscale doesn't have a purpose, what was the purpose of grayscale?
Why?
Or just like, why have the maesters up until Sam been so bad?
Oh,
yeah. I don't know. Guys, these are all detail-oriented questions that we won't know until we actually watch the show. Which is crazy.
Execution matters. Damn it, Neil.
In the storm?
I walked us right into it.
No, it's perfect.
Those are all the questions I have. Do we have any other thoughts?
You
guys. Dave, take back over.
Yeah, so that's sort of how that's going to be going in terms of us suddenly just dropping things that we think we know as fact and then walking them back and then throwing a smoke bomb of speculation and then stirring it all up. So it's some sort of smoke salad.
Storm.
Smoke storm. Smoke storm. Salad. Yes, good.
Smoke
I'm sorry, guys.
Storm.
I'm really hungry, and I can it's like, see a salad from where I'm sitting.
It's like we've gone from like the literal version of a storm to like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatball storm.
Exactly.
It's perfect. Salad storm.
Dragon yes. Feller. Okay.
Dragon Feller.
Oh, and what if they...
Okay, yeah.
They could burn down King's Landing and rename it Dragonfell.
Ooh.
Because that's where the Dragonfeller hey. Came from. Yeah, crackpot theories. I still got it.
Well, guys, if you want to tune in for more of that, we will be back with the premiere, finally, of Season 7 of Game of Thrones. It's entitled Dragonstone. This is the description we have. Jon organizes the defense of the North. Cersei tries to even the odds. Daenerys comes home, probably at a Dragonstone. That's
cue up that
means.
Song. I'm coming home. Coming home. Tell Dragonstone I'm coming home.
Perfect. Right?
And Ed Sheeran dies.
And Ed Sheeran's definitely not making it through his episode. He's going to be the Ian McShane with less acting talent of this season.
How dare you besmirch Ed Sheeran. Okay. Dave, sorry.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We're going to split it into the calm and the storm sections. So whether or not you're into what we just did, come back. Until then... Guys, where could people catch you around the internet? Let's start with Neil.
You can catch me at filmschoolrejects.com, where I finished updating my rankings of every Game of Thrones episode, and we have a new number one that I believe pleases my co-hosts, and you should check that out.
I feel like an influencer, like a millennial influencer.
It's, you know what?
It's a good argument.
It was discussions from our... Con of Thrones experience that really changed my mind on what the best episode of Game of Thrones is, but I'll let you guys go and read it. You can also get me on Twitter at Rejects, and don't forget, follow us for more polls and fun at Storm of Spoilers on Twitter, and email us your questions, comments, and otherwise, stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And Joanna Robinson.
You can find me over at vanityfair.com writing a lot about Game of Thrones. I have an interview today that went up with the casting director Nina Gold, where she went through like a bunch of audition history with me, which was really, really fun. I have a lot more coming up, and I will be seeing the first episode of Game of Thrones tomorrow in Los Angeles at the premiere, so that'll be fun. And if you miss Con of Thrones, you know, obviously I hope you listen to our Storm of Spoilers live show, but you can also hear the panel that Dave Chen and I co-moderated with a bunch of the actors from the show on the Cast of Kings feed, the podcast of Cast of Kings. If you don't listen to it, that's our other Game of Thrones podcast, and the full panel is up there right now. It's really fun. So have a listen.
Cast of Kings, fancy new logo. I dig it.
Yeah. Via, of course, WikiLeaks. Wiki Rascals is actually
WikiLeaks is actually where we got all the information for the storm.
Wiki Rascals, aka Gustavo. Thank you.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. We'll be covering Game of Thrones at Athrillist.com this year.
Woo!
I think it starts to have like a Everything You Missed piece, which everything is light because I had to keep it under a word count and got some stuff cut. So that'll be good. And then Monday's Snap Reaction, which is actually going to predate the podcast coming out. So if you really want to get down into the weeds with us, all three of us will be reacting. That will culminate in a fantastic Storm of Spoilers podcast for you next week. We're finally here. Remember the bread and salt. See you next week. The queen, I'm the king.